Two silkworms had a race. They ended up in a tie. No. No. You want one that causes that. A dog gave birth to puppies near the road and was cited for littering.
Ooh.
Oh, that one hurt.
A patient rushed into his... This is from Stan Iceland today for lunch. A patient rushed into a psychiatrist and said, "Help, help, doctor, I'm invisible." And the doctor said, "I can't see you now."
Touché, Stan.
Okay, ready?
Ready.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
I'm John Hotchner, and you're listening to Stamp Show Here Today.
Stamp collecting happens when we dream together.
Welcome to Stamp Show Here Today, episode number 42. I'm sitting here with Scott, Cash, and Jeff, and I'm your host, Jessica. You can find us on Facebook at Stamp Show Here Today and on Twitter at Stamp Show HT. Tell your friends you can find us on iTunes, Podbay, and Stitcher. Let's talk about stamps.
And always remember, stamp collecting happens when we dream together.
I was going to say, it sounded like you were waiting for something there. You paused just a little bit.
I was going to see if he chimed in or not.
I was going to. That should not be a surprise.
That's just to provide an edit cut.
So this week we were talking about stamp news. Your postcard could be at the Smithsonian. Hashtag stamp stories, hashtag back to school. And our expert topic of the week is, oh, Canada.
I like the...
No claps? No round of applause?
I like the South Park version better.
Oh, wow. That one I can't sing so well. Yay.
There's your applause.
Okay, so stamp news. The post-secret exhibit is now open, according to Pushing the Envelope, the Smithsonian National Postal Museum blog. And we mentioned this on episode 18 before, if you want to go back and listen to it. But Post Secret is a gentleman who collected people's secrets in the form of postcards or other random objects, which he had mailed to his house. And it became like a tourist destination. People would go and take pictures in front of his mailbox and share really intimate details about their lives or jokes. Probably Cash's were all jokes.
I'm immortalized there somewhere.
Yeah.
I need to send a postcard.
But they literally, he had a basement full of postcards. They call it the Pyramid of Cards. And they boxed it all up, and now it's at the Smithsonian behind a wall of glass.
I think it's one of the best sociological experiments I've ever seen. It's pretty spectacular. The stuff that he got out of people just accidentally on an idea.
Is this at the Postal History Museum or at the Smithsonian?
The Smithsonian.
I mean, which one?
The National Postal Museum.
Oh, cool. Because the Smithsonian is like, what, 14 libraries now?
Something like that. It's gigantic. I was told it takes a week to see it all now. So.
Yeah, they still like week passes there and stuff. You can't really see it all in one day.
Well, you can see all the buildings in one day.
Yeah, that's easy.
Physically with your eyeballs, yes. You could go one, two, there's another. Oh, there's now. Going inside is a different story.
Could you see them all if you were in a helicopter and then landed on the White House lawn?
There you go.
There you go. So you can go see what this scientific experiment looks like. I guess we can call it science now.
Yeah, I guess.
It's a social experiment.
Small S science.
As opposed to big S.
It's a social experiment.
Yeah, it's crazy how it took off. You know, it went from a couple of postcards to now it's an entire museum full, it seems like.
Well, and it grew organically. He didn't market it or promote it at all whatsoever. It just exploded.
I think maybe we should take credit for it.
Oh, there we go.
I think it predates us a little bit, unfortunately.
A little bit, a couple of years. It was started in, 2003, I believe. Yeah, 2003, 2004.
Oh, totally off the note, though. You know, last podcast we were talking about the July 4th numbers bombing. we are massively up in our listenership. I don't know what country is number two still.
Oh, I haven't checked in a while.
Yeah.
I mean, it was Romania. Then Holland nudged him out. We'll find out next week or next report period who the new number two country is. Number one, yay, USA.
Good old US of A.
Well, we speak English, so we have a big advantage there.
Well, sort of anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's funny, our Twitter feed is picked up in the United Arab Emirates all of a sudden.
No.
What?
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
That's weird.
We increased over 50% in like a 14-day period.
Mm-hmm.
Well, people need to digest their media differently, and podcasts are kind of in general taking off. Mm-hmm. So.
I can answer that question. The Netherlands still wins second place with 21% of our total listens.
Woohoo!
And Canada, sadly enough, is a distant third at 2%.
Oh.
Well, maybe this
will
spike their
significant.
Interest.
Well, today we're talking about Canada, so maybe we'll get some more listeners.
Okay, so our hashtag stamp stories, hashtag back to school. There's a Postal History Foundation in Tucson. Have any of you guys been there or know anyone there?
Tucson?
Yeah, Tucson, Arizona.
Yeah.
Apparently, they offer school teachers and their students some excellent stamp-related projects. And they have up to 12,000 students nationwide.
Wow.
That's a lot of kids.
Yeah.
So like the old Ben Franklin stamp.
I was reading about that and trying to find it. It was ironic because he would have never seen a stamp.
That's true.
But they named, he's the face of stamp collecting.
Well, he was the first technical postmaster general of the United States. He served from July 2nd, which is when the Declaration of Independence occurred, not July 4th. And he resigned, I believe, in November. So from July to November, he was the first Postmaster General.
Yeah, I was trying to find out after-school programs that were stamp-related, and that came up. But the last article I could find about it was in 1982.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm guessing it's not that widely
seen
anymore.
They got incredible donations and stuff like that from stamp dealers and stuff like that. Mystic helped them out. H.E. Harris helped them out. A lot of dealers helped them out. But really, when the post office was going through its troubles and had to cut, they cut it. And when they cut it, they lost their national sort of guidance. And when the national guidance disappeared, the Benjamin Franklin slowly died.
Well, this Postal History Foundation is still going strong. So if you want to offer any of your stamps, stamp collections, accumulations, libraries, banker boxes full of extra stamps that are cluttering your closet, they are a non-for-profit, and they will give you a receipt for your donation. The address is Postal History Foundation, 920 North 1st Avenue, Tucson, Arizona, 85719. And their website is postalhistoryfoundation.org.
And just, I am not a tax accountant. I want to put that out there. But these are in-kind donations, which makes a huge, gigantic difference. So this is a great way for people to donate to stamp collecting and do an actual donation that isn't going to get you in trouble with the IRS. Like, you know, sending $1 million in 3-cent stamps to Salvation Army or something like that. This is in kind, and this is legit.
What does that mean? What's the difference?
Well, let's say like Cars for Causes.
Okay.
Okay. You donate a car to a person, and they will sell it and give it the value.
Mm-hmm.
So you give stamps to the Salvation Army, they're going to sell it and give you the value. But if you gave a car to an actual company, or I'm sorry, an actual nonprofit, that then used that car to deliver meals to elderly people, now all of a sudden you're not getting the value that it's sold for. You're getting the actual like Blue Book value, which could be dramatically different. So whenever you can do a donation in kind, which means a donation that the person actually uses the thing that you give them, you tend to get much, much better write-offs.
Wow. Interesting. Keep that in mind, everybody.
So tell us about your after-school stamp activities at hashtag stamp stories, hashtag back to school. So updates. Cash, go ahead.
I got nothing.
I thought we looked up, the wording on that.
Oh, we did. Yeah, let's go over that.
So just to clarify, on the extra super rare 100 uninverted Jenny sheets, we were talking about what the card says exactly, and so thanks to one of our local auction houses, I believe it was Siegel, we actually found the wording. They included a scan of the card. The card reads, "Congratulations," and it's in a font about four times larger than the rest of the text. It goes on to say, "You have just purchased a limited edition right side up inverted Jenny stamp souvenir sheet. This souvenir stamp sheet is one of only 100 sheets printed and distributed for customers to purchase." Yes, that's right. You now own one of only 100 stamp sheets in existence. Please call, and then a phone number, to register your souvenir sheet, and you will receive a special certificate. Please have your limited edition sheet of stamps handy when you call. Thank you for your interest in the United States Postal Service stamp program.
Now, and my feedback on it is, congratulations is like, oh, okay, you're getting it to me. But as soon as I read that first sentence, that I have gotten a limited edition sheet. All the sheets are limited edition. They only printed like a million of them, right? Or something like that.
2.2 million.
2.2 million. Oh, so goodness. It's limited edition to 2.2 million. And you look at it and you go, you know, it just has that wording of junk mail.
Well, not only that, but I mean, Elvis plates are limited edition.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean it's worth anything. And it's this plain white postcard with black font, Times New Roman typeface. It's nothing spectacular. It's not really going to catch your eye, and it does look like junk.
That's why I said before, you know, it's not something that's really going to grab you and say, you found a $50,000 sheet. And it could be why we've only got 21 of them out there. I mean, I don't know what percentage of the issue has been sold, but I have a funny feeling it's over 21%. You know, like Steve said last week, you know, probably they sold at least half of it. And if they sold half of it, 50 of them should be out there.
Okay, so I'm going to bring up my own update, and that's that we got our first iTunes review, which Woo! I'm totally geeking out about. I tried to get my friends to review us online, and they wouldn't even do it.
Louie.
Lazy lazies. So our first customer review, which is legit, we don't know this person, so we didn't pay them or anything. great stamp collecting podcast by Tex and MD. Very good format with some great info.
And he gave us 5 stars.
He did. Yay. So excited. This is the kind of stuff that keeps us going. And, you know, really good numbers too. So thank you for that. And please feel free to rate us on iTunes, Podbay, or Stitcher. We do read them, and we will read them on the air, even. So our expert topic of the week is Canada. We've talked about the anniversary of the Canadian beaver stamp on episode 28, which depicted a beaver designed by Sanford Fleming with a denomination of 3 pence.
Who is also the co-inventor of the tube sock.
Oh, yep. There it is. So what inspired this was an article by Richard Lehman in Forbes, which says Best Buy Stamp Valuations of Canada.
And as the generic disclaimer, we do not suggest people discuss investing in stamps. And that being said, let's discuss investing in stamps.
There we go.
First of all, why don't you give the little website address where they can find the article? Because it is an interesting article to read.
I don't know where it is.
Says the guy who is, like, interested in financial stuff.
Hey, I've got a piece of paper that says I'm smart in economics.
Oh, yeah, I don't see the actual
thing. Oh,
here it is. It's Forbes.com/site. Well, this is really long. Why don't you just do a search for Best Buys Stamps Valuation Canada?
Forbes.
And this will pop up. It'll probably give you a little thing in the front end to say click here to go to the website. But it's by Richard Lehman, who we have quoted before. And it goes over some very interesting stuff in relation to Canadian stamps and why he thinks they are going to outperform other countries.
Well, I think one of the things that he touches on that was really interesting to me was the fluctuations in currency between both Canada and the U.S. and Canada and Europe.
Well, actually, let's get specific. It's the fluctuations in currency between the Unitrade catalog of stamp value,
which is a Canadian specialized catalog,
the Scots catalog,
which is a U.S. specialized catalog,
and the Stanley Gibbons,
which is the British specialized catalog.
So the difference in prices between these three catalogs is what he's looking at. So a stamp that may be overvalued, well, in his analysis, he says that he doesn't know which ones are overvalued, but he can predict which ones are undervalued.
Oh, interesting.
By the differences in price. And each of these catalogs is priced in a different currency. The Unitrade, obviously, in Canadian dollars, the Scott catalog in U.S. dollars, and the Stanley Gibbons in British pounds. So between these three, you have, first of all, they're not printed at the same time every year. All three are not printed at the same time every year. They're at various times. And also then you have currency fluctuations that occur in between those printings as well as after they're printed. And then so when you look at the relationships between the values in these three catalogs, that's what he's using to be able to kind of predict which stamps are undervalued and better investments.
So he goes over Canadian stamps. Over the past 5 years, mint Canadian stamps have gone up by 60%.
Oh, wow.
And over the last 10 years, they've gone up 191%.
That's a big change.
Yeah, used stamps went up 21% over the last 5 years and 80% over the last 10. And I always think this is interesting because I collect used stamps, but always mint stamps outperform used stamps from an investment standpoint. And that's because people who collect want quality. And they see quality as an investment, or even if you're not an investor and you're just looking for something to collect, you want the nicest. And
yeah,
so
and those cancels
mint
just
is unused.
Make,
yeah.
So the cancels just make the stamp look dirty and therefore less attractive.
So what do you guys think has changed in the past 10 years?
What?
What do you think has changed in the market in the past 10 years where there's such a big rise?
Well, I would attribute it to two things. First of all, of course, inflation. Second of all, there's a lot of money sitting outside of the traditional investment places. You know, people aren't putting their money into the stock market. People have taken their money out of real estate. So there's actually a lot of money inside of bank accounts. And people will spend money slowly on stamps because they like them. And so probably the demand for stamp collecting and coin collecting also, I'll throw both of them together, has gone up much out of proportion of people who are looking at typical investment things. Like, what would you rather invest in? A 12-cent USS Adriatic 1869 stamp that looks really cool in really good condition, or hog futures?
Good point. That's great.
And you can't go visit the hog. Or
no,
name
you
it.
Can't. No,
Bacon.
All pigs are named Bacon. No, I see that. That's true. That's interesting because you can, if you start out young enough, you can have a stamp collection that you add to very slowly, just as you get things that you like that add value to it over a very long period of time.
Yeah, it's called amortization.
Yeah.
Accumulation. Averaging. Okay. Cost averaging.
Cost
averaging.
Okay.
Yeah, you're cost averaging.
Amortization is dramatically different.
Yeah.
I'll never forget forget, we were in our stamp shop one day looking at stamps, and this little 7-year-old came in and said,
"Oh my,
what's your spot price on gold?" and his babysitter was just there going, "Yes."
She was trying to hide her
serious.
Face.
She's carving it.
You know.
I don't know this kid.
The nanny was there just going, you know, this and is then, how we spend our days.
And then the kid debated the spot price.
No, yes. I'm impressed.
And I was going, where's the hidden camera?
Right?
Because
are we being punked?
I know. I was still very much not into spot prices of gold at 7.
No.
So anyway, the Canadian dollar has dropped significantly against the U.S. dollar, which means that the UNIC trade price versus the Scott's catalog price versus the Stanley Gibbons price. And the reason why he brings in Stanley Gibbons is because British Commonwealth is collected throughout the world. So Canadian stamp collectors exist everywhere. They're not just in Canada. And so when you have British Commonwealth, you have a larger number. And especially the Canadian provinces, you know, those are widely collected because people think they're cool, because they are. And, you know, these are pre-Canada, you know, the Queen's stamps, Queen Victoria stamps.
So since Canada was once a European colony, what is the difference between Canadian collectors' tastes compared to their European historical counterparts?
Well, let me point something out. The United States was a colony of Britain, so I'm not sure how to address
that. Well, it's just the idea. I was talking to Lloyd about it a little bit, that it seems like people in Canada, actual Canadian nationals, and even U.S. collectors that collect Canada, that go after Canadian stamps versus European collectors seem to have a very different set of standards for what they're collecting.
Yeah. Canadian collectors collect more like the United States does. Asian collectors collect much differently. Asian collectors are coming around, but typically, they collect not for quality. Mm-hmm. They like the quality, but they are just as happy with a used stamp that has a tear in it as a mint never hinged stamp. Now, that's changing dramatically, and it's changing quickly. But you see that in China. You know, 10 years ago in China, they did not care if a stamp was hinged.
Well, that's like when most kids start collecting, is it doesn't matter to them what condition it is, just so they can fill a spot in their album.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what you see.
But it's not.
Have been seeing.
I think that it's more cultural than it is age related. And I see that right now today. And I'm going to give everybody a little tip, because I've kind of gone through all the dealers and already skimmed out all the stuff that I want.
All of them? Wow. But,
yeah, every single one in the world.
But one of the things is that Thai collectors, the stamps of Thailand, they're very collectible, highly sought after, demand is very high. But they do not care about hinging, not bad hinging, but they do not care between hinging and never hinging. The premium that they foresee between a hinge stamp and a never hinge stamp is very small, like maybe 10%, 20%. Whereas in the United States, hinging can mean the difference between 100% and valueless. And so, you know, I go through, and especially the first 100 stamps of Thailand, I look for never hinged, and I'll buy them with zero premium. I'll pay the hinge price for the never hinge. India, I do the same thing. India is changing very quickly, too, because there's so much money involved. But China, 10 years ago, you know, people didn't care about the hinging so much. Now, a monkey that's hinged cannot be sold. I mean, it's not that it has a cheap price. It's not, you know, a Chinese monkey sells for about $1,265. A hinged one may not be able to sell at all for $500. I mean, there just may be no takers whatsoever. Nobody wants to touch it. So you have these disparities between hinging and never hinging that are taking off in these places. that's Western culture, not Eastern culture. And with Eastern culture, I mean, I know I'm being
generalistic,
very generalistic, because it also applies to Persia and Iran. It applies to Saudi Arabia, Kuwait, Qatar, Qatar, Jordan, you know, those sort of areas. Israel is different because Israel collects more like the Western. So they collect never hinged. And since their first stamps appeared in the late 1940s, they expect never hinged.
Well, it's really funny because as you keep saying this, I see this real subtle socioeconomic comparison, because it sounds like it's transitioning in some of these countries from more of a communistic standpoint of we all have the same thing to more of a socialistic or capitalistic ideology where I have the best.
Yeah.
Mine is better than yours. So is that a positive change then? I know in
there's no such
the United thing. States, we'd say it is.
It's just a change. I mean, I deal with people who collect India all the time. And they say, they scoff at us for grading stamps, because they'll show us this terribly centered stamp from a small province in India and say, you know, this is how they come. You're not going to find one nicer. What would it grade? And we'll say, you know, it'll grade like a 50. Mm-hmm. And they say, well, you know, it's the nicest series. And go, yeah, but that's the way you collect. But don't buy that stamp graded unless you want to get a 50.
But that's all the that's also the grading system. The grading system doesn't compare the stamps to each other. It compares the stamps to a standard. And if the standard for that issue is that the best one's a 50, then the best one's a 50.
This fellow showed me a sheet. And the sheet, the stamps on it, were not in rows. It was sort of like bending down to the left. Like, you know, it was 10 high on the left side, and on the right side, it was 9 high, because they, I mean, it was just...
Wow. The stamps are melting,
They didn't align the plate at all. I mean, whoever made this plate just
aligned the plate, they probably printed it one image at a time.
Yeah, they didn't care. So, you know, you sit there and you go, well, what's this going to grade? And they go, it's going to get a terrible grade, but it's a fantastic item. And
yeah.
So that's just how it goes.
And the reason for that is grading, you're comparing it to a standard, and therefore you don't have to know all of the issues of a country to get a grade, because it used to be, well, it's superb for the issue. Well, if you're just starting collecting, how do you know? Okay, it's superb for the issue. Well, what about this other issue?
Yeah.
Oh, for this other issue, it's crap.
Yeah.
And now you're, well, how am I supposed to know that? And that's why when you grade against the standard, okay, the finest one known for this stamp is a 50, but the finest one known for that might be 100.
Yeah. Well, I collect early India. I think everybody knows this. But, you know, I collect number 1 through 8. Used, and I collect Victorian India mint never hinged. It's hard to find because they have really small margins, but you know, I'm a grader, so I go for grading. I want the best stamps. That's not where the market is right now, really, in India. Where the market is in India is in the States. You know, the officials, the small areas, because these stamps look terrible, but they're incredibly rare and hard to find. So they're going for rarity and I'm going for quality. Eventually, we'll see what happens. But, you know, if they keep collecting like they do, then, you know, I have a nice collection. Nobody cares. And if it goes, you know, that people want quality, then I sit here and go, hey, you know, the premium for never hinged is not 50%. It's more like 200%.
So, back to Canada.
Well, actually, this is all right in line with Canada, because Canada went through exactly the same thing. As a matter of fact, everything did. But Canada, I just saw in the auction, they had some Jubilees and they had blocks of 4, where the 2 top stamps are hinged and the 2 bottom stamps are never hinged. And everybody went crazy because finding the Jubilees never hinged is sort of exactly the same in the United States as finding the Colombians never hinged. Now people want them. you know, 20 years ago, they say, you know, I'll take a hinge stamp. Now it's like, no, I don't want a hinge stamp. I want a never hinge stamp.
So out of all of these three catalogs, what do you think is the best to use for Pricing Canada?
Well, what he is saying is that you use all three of them.
Interesting.
And by using all three of them, you can tell which ones are going to go up and which ones are not. Or, excuse me, which ones have a higher probability of going up and which ones have a lower probability of going up.
This sounds almost like my statistics class.
It does. It sounds like
mean,
economics
median,
and statistics.
All that good old stuff.
Well, he does a Gibbons to Scott ratio, a GS ratio. And he assigns stars to it. And the ones that have the best star ratings are the ones that he would suggest investing in. I agree with him with one exception. I think that you can't go directly with the stars. You have to temper it with the stamp itself. General issues versus commemoratives, more popular issues versus least popular, like the Blue Nose. You know, that stamp has great value because of the story behind it and the hype behind it. So it may have a very low percentage, but mint never hinged in nice condition, that stamp will probably outperform the other ones.
What's the hype behind the Blue Nose?
Oh, it's supposedly the most beautiful stamp ever made.
Ever?
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Like,
so,
in the world?
Yeah.
Or the Canadian?
Yeah, we're going to go look this up.
No, he says, generally speaking, the world.
Wow.
And it's, for those who don't know, and I'm sure everybody does, it's a blue stamp with a blue sailboat on it. And it's very well engraved with a fantastic looking border to it. It's a 50-cent value stamp, so it's a higher value stamp, which cut down on its print run. I like it. I think it's great, but, you know, I think that we have in the United States the USS Adriatic, the 1869 stamp, and also Hawaii number 78, which are both cool, which I would put equal to it. Totally off the subject.
So it sounds like what he's talking about, this goes hand in hand a little bit with what he was talking about. We talked about another article of his where the collector being able to take advantage of, or to be put it in a nicer term, benefit from the change in currency values in obtaining British stamps. So this seems to be along the same lines. He's advocating that there is a way to figure out how the collector and potential investor can benefit from this increase in evolution in how Canadian stamps are collected in general.
Mm-hmm.
Aren't there some really rare Canadian councils, though?
Yes, there are. Well, there's.
Well, I think you can say that about most countries.
Yeah. But he doesn't factor in any used stamps. These are all for mint, right?
He on his list, he has mostly mint stamps, but he does have some used stamps also.
So where can collectors find these increasingly valuable Canadian stamps?
Well, everywhere. But, you know, the one thing that he didn't mention, and this goes back to quotes back from the 1890s. There was one of my favorite quotes is, don't buy one stamp for 25 cents, not 25 stamps for a penny each, because the stamps that are worth a penny each will be worth a penny in 50 years, and the stamp that you spent 25 cents for will be worth more. And the second thing is that quality always rules. The better the stamp, the more it will go up in value. Or if it doesn't go up in value, if it goes up in value exactly the same rate as all the other stamps, its liquidity will be increased. It'll be easier to sell a nice stamp than it will to sell an ugly stamp. So you could double your money on both stamps, but one of them may take you forever to sell, and the other one will be gone immediately.
The difference between trying to sell 1,000 one-cent stamps versus one $1 stamp later on. This is going to be easier, faster,
yep.
Less work.
Yep.
Okay, let's go ahead and open up
I will mention one thing.
Uh-oh.
He got fried on the blogs for even discussing investing in stamps. There were so many people who said, if you're investing in stamps, you're the devil and stuff like that. And I'm one of the supporters of the stuff he said, and I basically said, if you didn't have investors, you wouldn't have dealers, because nobody is going to buy a stamp, hopefully sell it to a collector, and make enough money to pay their rent, their electric bill, and have enough money left over so they can buy some food.
Yeah, no one's in the business of breaking even.
Right, exactly. So, every stamp dealer out there is an investor. And to say that it shouldn't happen in the hobby is to give the stamp dealers way, way too much control.
Well, I think whenever you get negative comments like that, it's goes back to trolls and sour grapes, honestly. It's people that don't understand the concept and would never be able to figure out how to benefit from what he's talking about anyway.
Like our Disney fans we were looking up last night.
Right? We were just going through that same kind of thing with another weird collectible that we like.
What happened with the Disney pins?
The pins that I bought 2 years ago are worth, I don't know, 150 more times what I paid for them.
Yeah, some of them it's pretty exponential.
Yeah, so I'm going at them saying, I could sell this that I bought for $100 for $500, but I like Disney too much, so.
But then we've got people on the other side that would say, oh, why are you selling it? You're hurting the hobby. Why are your prices so high? Well, not really. That's more of them complaining about the fact that they don't have them.
Yeah.
Honestly.
Yeah.
So it's the same kind of thing as far as I'm concerned. People are just complaining because they can't figure out the system.
Well, like I said, it is taboo to speak about investing in stamp collecting.
But we still talk about it.
Yeah, but we put the
little
caveat in the front, which that makes it okay. Oh, here we go.
Let's open up the sheet that hopefully is one of 100.
Again, Woo-hoo! This is from the Stamp Fulfillment of Kansas City.
That almost doubles our odds, right?
Yeah.
Almost.
Definitely.
Yeah. So let's see if they like me. If they liked me this day, then this will be $12 in postage.
Oh. See, I think they just print the congratulations on that same plain white card that the regular ones come with anyway. So.
Maybe I should just, write on it congratulations and
see if... Okay, you can email us at stampshowheretoday@gmail.com, Twitter at stampshowht, Facebook, stampshowheretoday, and our website, www.stampshowheretoday.com, with your questions and comments. You can now leave your questions and comments on our Google Voice answering machine anytime, country code 1-949-873-4298. There's also a link to a Google Voice on our website so you can make the call from your computer. And on that note, keep collecting.
This is Gregory Slaughter from Esper, and I'm listening to the Stamp Show Here Today.
Hi, this is Stephen Patillo, also known as Stamp Show Steve. I'm sitting here in the offices of PSE, Professional Stamp Experts, and I'd like to say hi and welcome you all to come to the various stamp shows once a month in Glendale, Van Nuys, and Anaheim. You can find all these dates, locations, and maps at stampshowsteve.com, and we welcome you to bring your stamps in to sell or buy or trade. There's multiple dealers there to help you fill in your collection or to buy what you may have for them. I hope that you all can sometime venture out and come to one of our shows, look it up on our website, and come. And if you have stamps for authentication purposes or grading purposes, seek out myself or the table that represents PSE, Professional Stamp Experts.
This episode of Stamp Show Here Today is brought to you by the Philatelic Book of Secrets, the book that teaches you about repurfs, regums, color varieties, and much more. Get yours for $10 at www.philatelicsecrets.com today.